jam. Got me running round in circles, grinning upside down.
Each individual in our personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. So tonight's speaker, I've been knowing this guy for I think a couple of years from this fellowship and another fellowship, and what stands out about him is he's got a lot of sobriety time, but he's very humble and he's very quiet and he's not showy, and I really respect that, and I give you Bobby. Woo!
Bobby, I'm an alcoholic. With God's grace and the company I keep, I've been sober since July 7th of 2007. I've never spoken to a microphone before. It's kind of weird. Like Lisa said, I am kind of humble. I'm a man of few words, so this might be a struggle for me to talk about myself for the full time. I did make some notes. I'll start from the beginning when I was young. So I grew up in a single-parent household. Mom was an alcoholic and was usually unavailable for me. And she also smoked weed. That's just part of her story. And, you know, as a child, you know, what I noticed was that, you know, some of my friends' houses smelled just like my mom's. You know, imagine that. Let's see. You know, because mom was usually unavailable for me, there was a lot of life skills that, you know, just didn't get taught. So I was always kind of socially awkward, still kind of am. Didn't have a father growing up, although mom was married a couple times. I never really connected with any of them. You know, they were just, I was real young too. So I was always looking for someone to look up to, someone to follow. So I started hanging out with older people. Always kind of gravitated towards older guys, kind of like a father figure. And I found someone at around, you know, age 7 or 8 that looked kind of close. He was older, a couple years older, and he had another older friend. They kind of accepted me. They put up with me. And that was kind of cool. But at around age 10, that older friend molested me. And that's not something I share often. I've only shared it in one other meeting. And I share that because it made me feel damaged. You know, it made me feel different than everyone else. Everyone I went to school with, no one was like me. You know, I was the only one, you know, inside my head. And that's a lot to carry as a child, you know. In my early teens, I took some of my mom's weed and I tried to smoke it with my cousins. I say tried because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. And it was before YouTube and all that, you know. There was no internet to teach me how to do drugs. So we tried unsuccessfully. You know, I did kind of start dabbling in some of my uncle's liquor. And I didn't like the taste, man. It was horrible. I didn't understand how he could drink it. I forgot to mention, you know, when I was early, one of my mom's husbands, he used to drink the beer down to the bottom of the label, and he would hand it to me. And I was like 4, maybe. And, you know, that's just what he did. So, you know, I wasn't new to alcohol. I just didn't like liquor. It was horrible. You know, as time went on, mom's drinking progressed, as many people do. She was single, just struggling a lot. And, you know, her drinking, it just kept getting worse, and she started changing more when she would drink. And at around age 14, 15, I told my mom, I said, I don't like the way, or the person you become when you drink. And that was enough for her to quit. You know, she reached out to someone and got some help, and she quit drinking. She still smoked, but she quit drinking. You know, so at least I didn't have to worry about the crazy mom that comes out after, you know, about an hour after she gets home. Let's see, at about age 15, 16, I started doing what I wanted to do because, well, single-parent household, you only have one parent to deal with, and, you know, it's a lot easier. I could just get away with stuff. I started getting into trouble, and I found some older friends that, or I met an older friend that, you know, I wanted to be around. You know, he was older. They had their own house. I was only 15, 16. They drank all the time. They had girls coming over at all hours, and they smoked weed. So I was like, well, shit, I need to hang out with these guys. Well, these guys, they taught me how to drink and smoke weed. You know, I basically went through drinking boot camp. I would go over every weekend, and I would get drunk until I threw up. And it started with 2-3 shots and progressed on, you know, over several months till, you know, I just didn't get sick. And at that point, I felt like I'd finally arrived. You know, I was like, okay, now I'm hanging with the guys. I can hang in here, you know. So that went on for some time. At around age 18, the one main friend that taught me how to drink moved out to Canada because that's where he was from. He went to Canada to live with his brother. And a year later, I went up there to get a different scene, you know. And well, it turns out that his brother was a huge cocaine dealer. And he was kind of like a big shot. So I was living a totally different lifestyle up there. Everywhere we went, we had VIP. We were just, you know, the people to hang around. We would go. There was one time I remembered we ordered 100 shots at the bar, and we just lined them up, and, you know, we were the life of the party everywhere we went. And, you know, my drinking just got so out of control. And, you know, after a year of being in Canada, my friend who taught me to drink said, you know, I think you need to slow down. You know, so I came back home for a couple weeks. I was just going to dry out a little bit and go back. Well, after a couple weeks, I decided Canada wasn't for me. You know, I'm like, I just can't. It's not going to work. So I needed to find some work. You know, I needed to find something to do. I ended up moving in with my uncle. He had a karate school, very, you know, kind of positive flow in his life. So I was going to go hang out with him and, you know, get my life together. Well, after a couple days, we're smoking weed and drinking on the back porch, you know, so I didn't make very good choices because he was a lot like me, too. I lived with him for a couple years, and, you know, throughout the years, both of our drinking just it progressed, man. Towards the end of living with him, one particular night I remember, I got so mad at him because he gave away a bottle of liquor, and I didn't even like that liquor. He gave it to someone, and I was like, what the f*** are you doing? Like, in my mind, that was my backup liquor, you know? And he didn't understand why I was so mad, and I flipped out. The end of that year, we were at a bar drinking in Covington, and the bar closed. I was so drunk, I didn't realize they were closing. They kind of just, like, shooed me out the door, and then I couldn't get back in. I was mad. I was drunk and mad. So I decided to run home because it was only 2 miles from the house. So I'm running home, and I'm falling over on the side of the road, and, one of the last times I fell over, I was getting up, and the cops were there to help me up. They're like, oh, let me give you a hand. So they gave me a hand and a free night to stay somewhere. I woke up the next morning missing a tooth and taser marks on my back. Yes. I called my grandfather to come get me out. He said, I think you need to stay there, and hung up the phone on Christmas morning. That's a Christmas to remember. I hope I never forget it, actually. I felt so bad. My uncle that I was living with, he had gone to the jail to try to get me out. And he said, I'm here to pick up Bobby Hodges. And they said, your nephew's an asshole. I said, you need to go back home. And he told me about, you know, the way I was acting, and I remembered some of it. I felt so bad. I handwrote a note to the cop that arrested me and dropped it off at the police station apologizing. Didn't know I was doing a night sculpt then. But I did. Let's see. So, that was Christmas Eve. On New Year's of that year, a week later, I was at a New Year's party, and we had a room there, and it was to see one of our favorite bands, and they had open bar. Of course, I'm there. That night, I met a girl. We had a lot in common, like when everyone else was passed out, we were the last two up, so we started talking. That's the way I meet people. She drank a lot like I did, and you know, we exchanged numbers and this and that. That turned into a relationship, and you know, my drinking progressed. You know, I just did what I do. And in July, let's see, where was I? So in July, I think it was like July 5th. I decided, you know, I really need to get a better job. I think I want to go work at a factory. My dad works at a factory. He's got really great benefits, but they drug test. So I'm like, well, I guess I got to stop smoking weed. So I quit weed on July 5th. On July 6th, we go to a concert, me and my girlfriend, and the headliners that night had canceled. So I was already drinking. That made me mad. You know, I'm a lot of mad in drinking. I don't know why that goes hand in hand with me. But, you know, so I got really mad and really drunk, and we got home that night, drove home that night, and we got in some huge fight. Someone called the cops. She lived on campus at Southern Polytech. So someone heard us fighting. Someone called the cops. They came. By the time they got there, neither one of us knew why they were called. They're like, I didn't hear any fight, you know. Well, the next morning, my girlfriend told me, I don't like who you become when you drink. That hurt. That hurt a lot because, you know, one of the friends I had when I was young, his name was Doug, and, you know, his house smelled like my house. And one of the things I told Doug was, I don't ever want to be like my mom. And when my girlfriend told me, I don't like who you become when you drink, I realized I had become my mother. Someone I never wanted to be. That hurt a lot. It really did. And I knew the answer for me was none. I can't moderate. I tried that shit. It just does not work for me. You know, so I knew the answer was no drink. I called my mom and I said, well, how'd you quit when you quit? Because you used to drink a lot and you just up and quit one day. How'd you do it? And she said, well, I called your uncle and this is what he told me to do. He told me to pray to God to remove the obsession to drink. So I did that. I did that with tears streaming down my face. I meant it with every bone in my body. That was July 6th of 07. So my date is July 7th of 07. 3 weeks dry. Well, no. So I start looking for work because I'm starting to go crazy without drinking and without smoking. I need something to do with my hands just because they won't stay still. So I'm like, hey, I called my uncle. I said, I need to clean your shop, man. Please just let me come clean your shop. I need something to do. And he's like, all right, come on. So I go to my uncle's and I start cleaning his shop. And I'm staying with him. And about 3 weeks in, I'm 3 weeks dry at this point. My character defects are just pouring out of me, and I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I'm just this angry asshole. And, you know, I call my mom, and I'm like, I'm so mad. And she's like, well, maybe you should ask your uncle to go to one of those meetings that he goes to. And I said, hell no. I'm not that bad. So literally the next day, I think I asked him something like, do you think I can go to that clubhouse that you go to next time you go? He's like, if you want to. So, he was going on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I think that was a Wednesday. So the next day we go, and So it was a CA meeting. He's a cocaine addict. So we go to a CA meeting. But before that meeting, we go and have dinner and meet up with some friends. And I remember at dinner, you know, his friends were laughing and they were happy and, you know, cracking jokes on herself about some of the dumb stuff they've done. And I thought that was a little weird. I'm like, man, I don't like to laugh at myself. You know? I don't like to talk about my faults. What are these people doing? But they were happy doing it. So anyway, I went to the meeting, and in that meeting, I heard things that made me realize that these people are just like me, or maybe I'm just like these people. And it gave me some relief. I guess I didn't hear a magic answer that night, but I heard something that made me just want to keep going. And, you know, the next Tuesday, we went to the other meeting that he went to. And, you know, I saw some of the same faces, which made me feel good. I was like, okay, this is cool. We met some other new people. I was one of the few young people that was going to CA meetings. Usually just a bunch of old crackheads. But I was a young person, and people didn't know why I was there. They're like, are you just here for your uncle? And I'm like, no, I've got a problem, you know. They just didn't believe it. I was 24. I should be out partying and having fun. But, you know, I got to my stopping point really early in life. So, I don't know if you put it together, but, you know, mom's alcoholic. Her brother's a cocaine addict. I'm now alcoholic. I met my grandfather at his funeral. My grandmother says he used to do wood floors, but he wasn't very good at it because he would drink the lacquer thinner to get drunk. And, you know, in his last days, he was living on the streets. And he went to the hospital, and they told him, if you drink again, you will die. They were right. As soon as they let him out, he drank again, and he died. So I'm a product of the way I was raised, really. I see things differently. And let's see. Got a little off track. Yeah, so I like these people in the meetings, and I really got their humor, you know, and I think they kind of got mine. I didn't feel like I felt out in the real world. You know, in the real world, I always felt different. I heard it said early on that, you know, out there, I'm a unicorn running with zebras. Or a zebra running with unicorns, whatever. And then when I come in here, I find the rest of the zebras. You know, I'm like, this is my family. This is where I should have been the whole time. You know, throughout my youth, I was looking for someone to teach me about life and teach me how to do things and get through things. And I always made bad choices. I chose people that hurt me, ultimately. And you know, when I came to meetings, I found people that actually had healthy solutions. They taught me how to get through life and how to deal with situations like normal people. So in the meetings, I keep hearing, you know, get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. I'm like, man, I don't know who to ask for a sponsor. My uncle says, you pick the sickest guy in the room. I'm like, ah, man, I don't know. I'm just not good at making choices, you know. So I'm in the meetings, and this guy, he's close to my age. He's like, hey, man, you got a sponsor? I said, no. He's like, do you want me to be your sponsor? I said, yes. Yes, I do. That was easy. So we started working the steps. He would make time for me. I'd go to his apartment, and we would go through the book and do step work. And I think one of the best things he ever told me when we got to step three is you can choose your own conception of God. You know, at step three for me, you know, I came into step three with my vision of God. It was the God I grew up with. The God I grew up with, you know, I went to church and there was a guy standing just like me, you know, except he was shouting at his feet the whole time, talking about, you know, you sin, you die, everyone's a sinner, you're all dead kind of thing. I'm like, oh, well, it's true. So, you know, in my teens, I kind of turned my back away from God because of the things I was doing. I was like, well, he wants nothing to do with me. I guess I'll just do what I do. You know. But my sponsor told me that, you know, I could choose the characteristics of God that I wanted. I could choose characteristics of a best friend. You know, so I did that. I wrote those things down, and I told them to him, and he said, that's your God. And the thing is, for me today, is my God still has the same name. He's just a different guy. He doesn't have to be condemning. He loves me. And, you know, I know that right now, there's nothing I can do that would make my God love me any less or any more. You know, he just loves me for me. And that's helped me a lot. It really has. It gives me someone to lean on and to ask for guidance. My sponsor was kind of big on doing service work, and so was my uncle. I did mention it, but I didn't make it a point. So I'm still working for my uncle, and he's going to meetings. So I'm all the time close to someone in sobriety, you know, I think, which helped me a lot, because it was like I was at a meeting any time I was around him. You know, he was always just, you know, talking program talk to me. And that was good for me. I remember at one point I had to go back to Sears and pay for something that they didn't charge me for. He made me feel real bad about it. Cashier looked at me like I was crazy. But it is what it is. So I'm in this relationship, and I'm working for my uncle, who's in the program, and I'm going to meetings. I've got a sponsor. I'm doing steps. So I start to change. I'm not the same guy that my girlfriend I had met. You know, I'm starting to change, and she's not. She's still drinking like I used to drink. You know, we like to go to concerts, and at concerts it starts out great, but it always ends up me carrying her to the car. You know, it's not fun. Babysitting your girlfriend in sobriety. I'll just say that. You know, it's not fun changing the sheets because she wet the bed again. So we start to change, or I start to change, and, you know, we start growing like this. And, you know, at one point we thought maybe marriage would make this better. You know, so we get engaged. And, you know, a couple months before the wedding, she says, well, I'm not in love with you anymore. And I said, okay, well, I'm not going to change. I'm on this path, you know. So what I did was I secluded myself, and I put myself in the guest room, and I opened the book, and I kept my face in the big book for 3 or 4 days and didn't say a word to her. And basically what happened is she moved out while I was at the Rock, which was probably best. For those of you that don't know, the Rock is... it's a meeting of 400 alcoholic men that get together for 2 days and no one goes to jail. It's really awesome, powerful. And when I came home, I found out she took stuff that she wasn't supposed to, and character defects, you know. So it was all right. First breakup in sobriety, whatever, it was cool. What it did was it helped me get back in the program and really use my network. You know, I'd met a friend at about a year and a half in sobriety. I met this guy, and he was my age, and he turned out he worked literally right down the street from me. You know, so we hung out all the time. And when my relationship ended, I just stayed at his house. Him and his girlfriend basically babysat me, and they weaned me back to health because I was heartbroken. Really, even though I wouldn't change for her, I did love her. You know, and it hurt. And I couldn't just drink through the feelings. I had to feel them. You know, it really helped to have a network and meetings to go to share about it. I'd say about 7 months after that, I met another girl. And, you know, we started dating. And I ran out of notes, so the phone's going to do me no good now. So, yeah, I started dating. And, you know, this girl's never seen me drunk. Ever. It started out great, you know, always supportive of me, just wanted me to be good, go to meetings, stay healthy. But over time, the relationship deteriorated, you know, and we tried a lot of things. We tried counseling, you know, just all kinds of stuff, and it didn't work. And recently, I've asked for a divorce. You know, so I'm going through a divorce in sobriety, which I thought would be no big deal because last year, before the pandemic started, I had to put down my dog, which was the hardest thing done in sobriety. And for probably 3 months, I came in here after that, and I was just silent. I couldn't say anything. So these meetings in the program definitely kept me sober, because that was one time that part of me did want to drink. I just wanted to be numb and not feel, because it hurt. I got to my current state too fast. One of the things that, you know, that's been very beneficial to me that I did mention is service work. I do enjoy service work. It was said to me early on that, you know, if you're in a service position, it just pretty much ensures your sobriety. You know, and I believed that until I was treasurer for a year. I kind of actually got a resentment on a meeting for doing service work. But, you know, I have two home groups that, you know, I'm usually always at, and it's probably my uncle's fault, but they're on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You know, Tuesdays I'm here at 8 o'clock for the newcomers meeting, because I never want to forget that I'm still a newcomer. And on Thursdays I still go to the same CA meeting that I've been going to. And I still do dinner before with friends, a meeting before a meeting. And I don't mind chairing meetings. I don't mind cleaning up meetings. I don't mind anything that needs to be done. I'm willing to do it. There's lots of times that I'll go Thursday and I'll set up the whole meeting. And it's not like this. You don't just walk in and there's chairs already. You got to tear apart the whole room, set up the meeting, and then at the end, tear the meeting up and set up the room. It's not easy, but I don't mind doing it, because people get to come and have a meeting, and it makes me feel good. I don't sponsor a lot, although I do have a sponsee. You know, one of the things I've struggled with throughout my sobriety was feeling like I'm not good enough. You know, I've always felt this way. It's like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough to sponsor someone. What are they going to get from me? You know, so I don't try to go get sponsees. I don't do the recruitment thing. But when people ask me, I do say yes. You know, I have one requirement. Call me every day. And most everyone fails, except for my sponsee. 3 weeks in, I was like, he's still calling me. I mentioned last year that, you know, I had to put my dog down, and it was really hard. There was a time last year when I was not sure who the sponsor and sponsee was. I felt like I was being sponsored by my sponsee. He's been very beneficial to me. And that's just, you know, a gift from the program. I've gotten so much gifts from the program. Like, if you would have asked me when I first joined, what do you think you're going to get out of being sober? The list I would have gave you would have been petty. It would have been petty. Compared to what I have today.
Upside down, falling off the edge. It don't sound like fun. We gotta stop fighting everything, everyone. Ought to learn a lesson, breaking all the rules. Try a listening session. The guilty loves it too. Sleep away the day, hiding from the sun. We gotta stop fighting everything, everyone. is fighting. It's tearing us apart at the end of our rope. With nowhere to run, we gotta stop fighting everything.